From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a Rochester 7th grade classroom. Parents and students described a lesson in which social studies teacher Patrick Rausch gave balls of cotton to his students and instructed them to pick the seeds out. Rausch is white. Many of his students are black. Students allege that Rausch also referred to himself as Massa. They say that when students asked if they could stop picking and cleaning the cotton, the white students were allowed to do so. The black students were not. In a statement, the district announced it had placed Mr. Rausch on leave and had opened an investigation immediately after learning of the allegations. Rausch himself has not been giving interviews. The accounts of Rausch's lessons are accurate. Then it appears that Rausch is claiming to students that he is just trying to help them understand what their ancestors went through. But the students and parents have said that he went way too far and made the black students feel targeted and victimized, and that there are other ways to be creative in teaching history without inflicting fresh harm. This hour, we talk about not only this lesson, we'll talk about that, but we'll also discuss a number of related issues to how history is taught. And our first guest, let me welcome Jeremy Smith, the site director for the Freedom Scholars Learning Center. Jeremy, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Remind people what it is that you do with Freedom Scholars Learning.
Well, Freedom Scholars Learning is basically a cultural, reflective organization that really, really champions students' ability to engage in the love of reading. We don't really focus too much on phonics and phonic awareness, but we do spend some time on those particular things. But our biggest thing is getting kids to fall in love with reading. And that model that we adopt is the model that's been nationally known by Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools. So that's our model, and that's what we stick to with engaging children in our community.
Jeremy, thanks for being here. I also want to welcome Noel Evans, a WXXI reporter who has been doing some work on this story. And Noel, I won't keep you long. Thanks for making time. How are you on this sunny Wednesday?
It's gorgeous out, so I'm happy.
Listen, we all wish we were talking about sort of a different story, but can you at least just give us a sense for what you've been able to learn about not only the allegations, but, you know, maybe what we know so far about what happens next year?
I'm not too sure what happens next, to be honest. I know it's under investigation, and we won't really hear much until the investigation's been complete. I know that the teacher is on paid leave at the moment. When I spoke to families, two parents and a student, emotions were really high. The toll, I think, sometimes when we look at these things from a distance, it can seem a little different, but for the people who were involved, it was really, I guess, emotionally difficult to go through, evoking a lot of feelings of, for instance, a student shared with me that he felt bad for being black. I understand that he shared with others that that there's a point where between being his family's both Puerto Rican and African American, that if he had to pick one, he wouldn't want to be black anymore.
Wow.
After this.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's a lot to process with this, and I know in speaking with that student, part of it was the allegations that this isn't the first time something like this has happened with this teacher. And there were some other instances that he shared. But when we took a look at this from zooming out a bit, there is a place where, for like scholastically, you can order raw cotton to use in classes to help teach about this time in U.S. history. And, you know, in the article as well, this, we're at a point where there's disagreement over not just how to teach about the history of slavery in U.S. history, but also whether or not we should in some ways. You know, when we look at textbooks from, I don't know, let's say the 50s or whatever, you'll see that some of it has, there's been some amount of erasure. Some things have kind of been glossed over.
Mm-hmm.
The realities that some people went through are kind of afterthoughts. in a way, or, you know, they're not really the central character when you're looking at these textbooks. But, you know, to take something to a level where students are left feeling very much uncomfortable to the point where they don't want to identify with, you know, their heritage or who they are completely, you know, that's another level.
Right. And I know that the district has said they can't comment because it is an open investigation. So to your point, we'll see, you know, when they make some determinations on this. Sometimes this invokes teachers' unions, and my understanding also is that RTA and their head, Adam Urbanski, has said that certainly he wants to see the full story before making final conclusions, but he also said he would not defend damaging lessons. I don't think we've heard any more than that from RTA. Have you, Noelle?
No, the last time I spoke with Adam Urbanski, he said, you know, once again, these are allegations and we'll know more once the investigation is complete. So that's where he stands at the moment. The other thing I wanted to mention is there have been similar cases around the country in the past couple of years in San Francisco, South Carolina, New Jersey as well, where teachers have brought in cotton. As I said, you know, there's a place where you can order it. And getting a lot of pushback for how things are taught. And I think, you know, when it comes to the difference between being not racist versus anti-racist, if the full impact of a lesson isn't considered, especially for the students involved, I don't know, it seems to me that this isn't an isolated incident. So I'm curious where things go from here.
Well, I know you'll be reporting on that, and we certainly appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing what you've learned so far on this, Noelle.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Evan.
Noelle Evans, reporter for WXXI News. Jeremy Smith, so let's just start, before we kind of take a broader look at teachers and what their responsibility is, the room that teachers have to sort of be creative, let's just talk about this lesson as we understand it. And, you know, I'm always open to hearing from people who've been involved. We haven't heard directly from Mr. Rausch, the teacher involved and with the allegations here. But is there historical value, Jeremy, just to ordering raw cotton and letting every student in class hold it in their hands and, you know, independent of the student's background, saying, like, all right, hold this in your hands. This is what enslaved people were, you know, were forced to work with many, many hours in grueling conditions. Start there. Is there something valuable there, Jeremy?
Like I said, I've had conversations with individuals in my community about this particular situation. And a lot of our conversations have been about, you know, the attempt versus the intent, right? And, you know, we understand that the individual was trying to, you know, do a project-based learning where the learning was authentic and it was real from, you know, an outside point of view looking in. But the thing is that I'm mind-boggled with is that as an educator, one thing that we always understand is the importance of teaching students and not subjects. And when I say teach students and not subjects, you know, it's important that we know that we're looking at students' understanding about a particular content or an area that we're going to cover in sense of its well-being, right? How is this going to appeal to my child's well-being that I'm actually having in front of me, right? And sometimes that means that you look beyond academics, and that means that you really spend time in understanding that, you know, will this begin to actually be something that this child can build off in a positive way, or is it something that's going to be, you know, detrimental to them because it doesn't connect or speak to their experience about this material? And that's the second point, you know. Curriculum has to be, you know, based upon not always being cultural relevant, but always being cultural reflective. And I think that that's where we felt in this situation. The individual tried to make something that was meaningful, but at the same time, it wasn't reflective in what, you know, the experiences of what these kids went through and their ancestors, according to this meaningful discussion. So without that part not being a part of the actual lesson, I think that that was a trauma trigger, which is my third point, right? We have to understand that there's certain content that no matter what is going to proceed or lead to some type of trauma. and not paying attention to what that trauma may look like, or proactively preparing ourselves for that particular trauma, I think you open up a whole different door of situations that are hard to turn back. Like the young man saying that he no longer wants to be Black because of these particular situations, which is, you know, something that's a struggle for me to hear as a Black man and as an educator, right? I think that, you know, we need to kind of peel back and not always start off with the same old narrative when it comes to teaching, you know, the history of Blacks in this country, right? Or the history of Blacks in this world. I think we need to start going back to the times of, you know, when Blacks were, you know, considered in a more positive realm, you know, and consider, you know, more of the leaders of the world, let alone being, you know, inferior or to a superior person that they're selling in our actual curriculum today. I think that if we do that, that young man would have known that he came from something much more richer than what began to be only a small part of the struggle of what it meant to be Black in this world. And I think that it would have been something that he would just reflected on and not been to the point where he no longer wants to be attached to being African-American or Black, whatever his particular ethnicity he chooses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's where I'm at with that right now.
Yeah, and, you know, again, what we are hearing is the accounts from students that I don't have any reason to doubt, and there are multiple accounts of this, but I'll just put the caveat. I don't exactly know how the teacher structured some of this stuff, but I cannot think of any reason for a teacher to instruct the students to refer to him as Massa, or to refer to himself as Massa, you know, to use kind of a certain dialect or lingo, and to sort of role play a plantation owner. I mean, I cannot. Is there anything in your mind, Jeremy, that says that would have been appropriate?
None whatsoever. Especially in which it's a tough discussion, it's a tough matter. So the first thing I thought of is, why not having this be something in which you invite parents to be a part of the lesson? And if you want to make that connection so in depth, because at the same time, you know, you have to give some of those individuals who may be pondering or who may be, you know, thinking about, is this the right way? Because I know there's some children in there that, you know, at many times inside their bodies feeling like, hold on, this doesn't seem right, this don't feel right. But be not having that confidence to be able to say that, or be willing to actually, you know, put that to the forefront, to the teacher's attention. To me, you know, I think that that would have been more stronger if he would have invited more parents to be a part of that, because it's such a difficult discussion. But no, in any means ever, Evan, I would say that's something that, you know, I would allow, you know, as a principal, as any leadership in education, for a teacher to, you know, reenact such a tough situation that people in this country went through, especially when that teacher, for me, doesn't have that particular connection or understanding of what these kids are going through in their day-to-day experiences. And again, like I said earlier, if he understood the importance of teaching students in that subjects, he would have understood this. And I think that this is a step that's constantly overlooked when it comes to education in Rochester City School District and Rochester in the nation.
Now, once again, with the caveat, I'm not exactly sure how the lessons were structured, having no reason to doubt the accounts of the students who have spoken to our journalists at WXXI, journalists elsewhere, including the New York Times. Let me also pose a question for Jeremy on how you might go about trying to help students understand history. First of all, I think you always have to be very careful with a subject like slavery, mm-hmm. but the allegation here is that he brings the cotton, the students are instructed to pick the seeds out of the cotton, clean the cotton, that Black students ask if they can stop, and he says no. White students ask if they can stop, and he says yes, and the implication being, sorry, that's how history was, that's what your ancestors went through. What comes to mind for me when I hear that aspect, Jeremy, is I'm not a Black man. I'm reasonably confident, though, that Black people, including Black children, understand the historical implications of this better than white kids. Why are you reinforcing for the Black kids this is what it was like to be in these shoes? If anything, and I'm not even sure this would be appropriate, but if anything, I can't figure out why you wouldn't flip this and make the white kids feel that. Though I'm not even sure that that's appropriate.
No, good point.
But why are you reinforcing for the black kids who surely know what racism feels like, who understand much better than the white counterparts would what all of this must feel like?
That's a good question. I mean, the good thing about it is that there's things that's happening nowadays, through this time, right now, 2022, that resembles a reenactment of what was going on during the times of, you know, blacks picking cotton. So he could have chose activities that resonated in today's inequitable or unequal, you know, society, if that's what he was doing, in terms of trying to have that underlying message of why we're doing this, that he could have used in today that could have made a better, more connection than referred back to, you know, this particular slavery times instead of them have them actually do that, right? So I just think that I would love to see how this was planned out, because again, we don't have the actual unit in front of us, but I think to see how it was planned out and how it was carried out, to see the steps, and we could have easily mirrored this particular lesson or this curriculum by using something that's more relevant today, if he really wanted to do something where they were actually reenacting it, instead of using something so detrimental like that, you know, or something so controversial like that in terms of his position. So
yeah, and again, for listeners, I'm not suggesting that was a good idea to flip this. I'm just sort of musing here about some of the dynamics in play that seem obviously fraught from the get-go. But let me ask you also then sort of elaborate on that point, Jeremy, and ask you, when students are learning different historical lessons, I can understand broadly that some teachers might feel like, look, you're so far removed from something that, you know, you may not feel connected to it. You may not get it. You may not get what something was like. You might not get what it was like to grow up in a world without electricity. You might not get what it was like, you know, to not have paved roads. I mean, there's different things that we haven't, that a lot of kids haven't experienced, that I can understand you might try creative ways at experiential learning to help them get a little bit more of that. I don't know that a subject like slavery requires that. It's visceral, it's painful, and, you know, compellingly tragic on its own. Do students need to experience it in order to sort of connect with that lesson? And where do you start kind of identifying lessons, Jeremy, that are maybe appropriate places for experiential learning, creative approaches, et cetera?
It depends on what students. I definitely feel there is a need for students to learn, but like you said earlier, there is already some students who live in this world today that are still struggling and dealing with times as if we were still on the plantation, right? I mean, some still consider the plantation to still be living, right? The prison system. So it depends on what students you're talking about. But yes, I do feel that there's a need that students need to have authentic learning. Now, how do we go about that? There's many ways of doing that. I just think that this young man, the way in which he chose to teach this particular topic, again, I don't think that the choice of how to make it authentic was the right choice, especially, you know, knowing his background and the population that he's serving. I think that he should have, you know, did some outside resourcing and brought in some organizations, you know, that reflect more of what these kids live and what they go through to maybe have discussions or even carry such an activity out in which, you know, they're seeing it from their particular lens and the kids feel more comfortable. You know, I do think that enslavement was something that was real, you know, and that it takes, you know, a certain individual to really be able to withstand and go through what enslaved went through in America. And, you know, there's many ways to do that, not just doing it in the way in which, you know, you have role playing going on. There's field trips, right? There's Washington, D.C. Monument, or the state of Washington, D.C. has a huge museum that basically has, you know, these artifacts and things to be able to attach to really get an understanding and to be able to interpret, you know, what slaves went through that was real without you having to actually carry yourself as that. And then secondly, you know, knowing the population that you serve, a lot of young black men that I deal with, you know, I'm constantly, you know, having conversations with them about psychological slavery, right? So mentally, some of us, you know, I feel that the kids that I work with, in some cases, present themselves and still be stuck on the plantation, quote unquote. So enough of that, that's festering, you know, when you hit them with an activity that actually introduces the plantation to them in a way in which it's physical. I think for those students, you know, and depending on the population that this individual serves, I don't know, but for those students, it makes it 10 times more of a struggle to now really fight that psychological. And now you're putting me back into a situation in which, you know, the physical pain happens. So now, again, like I said earlier, those trauma triggers begin to happen. And sometimes when those trauma triggers happen, it may take eternity, or it may take a longer time than what they're going to be in school at the school, attending the school, to actually overcome that. And sometimes they may not overcome that. And that's the struggle that we deal with when teaching something in this way. So,
Talking to Jeremy Smith from the Freedom Scholars Learning Center about this story that I suspect a lot of listeners have heard, perhaps reported here on XXI, covered in City, the Democrat and Chronicle, the New York Times. I mean, this story about the allegation is that a seventh grade teacher in Rochester, a social studies teacher, referred to himself as Massa and was distributing cotton, telling students to pick and clean the cotton, de-seed it, to clean it. The white students were allowed to stop. The black students were not. The district is investigating this, and they're not talking until the investigation's over. And you can understand that. The teacher, is on paid leave. And we'll take your feedback on this, parents. When you hear about lessons like this, I'm curious to know how it hits you. What are the lines that are appropriate for creative teaching? And, you know, frankly, is this anywhere sort of in the universe of that, if the allegations are accurate? 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And I want to bring in Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle, also the author of a new book about the history of segregation and racism in Rochester schools. Justin, welcome back to the program. Thanks for making time.
Hi, Evan.
On this particular subject, anything more that we don't know? I mean, through your reporting, are we up to speed here? Do we know a timeline for an investigation? Anything else you can add there?
No. And so, there's two parts to it. There's finding out what happened. And, you wouldn't expect that to be terribly complicated. There's a finite number of people who were in the rooms at the time. But I think that the more important thing is what the consequence will be. And it's by design quite difficult to give a real draconian expansion discipline, including firing to a tenured teacher. That's a process in state law called 3020A. You have to present a lot of evidence and go before a hearing. And it's quite uncommon. I've gotten the documents on all the hearings across the state for 3020A, and you can do some fairly egregious things and get let off with a 6-month penalty or training or things like that. This could rise to that level. It's also often the case that the district and the educator in question will decide that it would be much easier if the person just kind of walks away and there's no record of anything. And you know, that too, by design, is not a transparent process. So I think that will be the interesting question, is what the disposition is. It's hard to imagine this guy coming back into a classroom in September, say, although it's certainly happened before. But that'll be what I'm looking for, is what the district makes of it and whether they come to some kind of agreement, which I'm sure there's been some conversation about.
Justin, I take your point that in investigating this particular allegation about this lesson, it's pretty straightforward. But beyond that, we've heard from parents and students who have said that there have been past lessons or past recent examples that they also took to be inappropriate or racist. Has your reporting focused on any of that?
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. I don't think there's any question in Rochester, in the suburban districts, in any other district that you choose in the country. I'm certain that comes up, hopefully not to this extent. But, you know, there's there's such a broad array of ways to do this wrong that teachers can fall on, not all of which are discipline worthy. But you know, I've talked to a lot of black kids in mostly white suburban districts, and they say to a person that as soon as the slavery lesson comes up, as soon as somebody says that word, you know, they get 20 sets of eyes turned to them as the one black kid in the classroom. So it's disturbing that this particular thing happens, but I think that you're right. That's the broader question, is what is the system or any system doing to ensure some kind of baseline of appropriateness and at the minimum, a list of, you know, don't make your students role play being in slavery, or, you know, like that one worksheet that's surfaces every now and then where it gives kind of the pros and cons of slavery. Don't do that. Like, at a minimum, there's a lot of harm reduction that can be done with some clear guidelines of that sort, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm someone who, you know, is, I've got a 10-year-old in, you know, and I understand the challenge for teachers. I also know that teachers struggle with the fact that they always feel like they're teaching to a test, or there's a lot of requirements for standardized tests. There's not often a lot of room for creativity. And teachers can be very creative in wonderful ways. But I think what reporter Justin Murphy just laid out is a fair baseline, that, you know, be creative, but there are certain boundaries that we do not cross here. So, Justin, can you hang there for 1 second? Because I want to take a phone call from a listener on this.
Of course.
Okay. Chris in Rochester. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I first want to start off by saying that, you know, I do agree that I think it's really not necessary for students to experience or have a feeling that will make them relate to what slaves may have felt at the time. But I want to pose a question to your guests that I wonder what they would think about this if the teacher had done this situation instead, which is the kids come into the class for that day and the teacher says, you know, here's a pop quiz. It's really important. It's going to be like 25-30% of your grade. In reality, it's not, you know, but the students don't know this. And, you know, the quiz is basically they have to meet a certain quota of cleaning out the cotton, something unfeasible, like 10 pounds of cotton that they have to clean out in order to try and give them the sense of desperation that slaves may have felt when they didn't meet their quotas for the day. They didn't eat that night.
Okay, hang there for a sec, Chris. Jeremy, what do you think? Do we have Jeremy? Might be on mute.
No. Oh, yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right. That's okay. All good. Go ahead, Jeremy.
No, I do agree that if the gentleman is mentioning, Chris, in particular, is saying that, you know, we need something that can kind of substitute an authentic way to address this actual issue without them actually doing the real actual activity. Because I was alluding to that earlier, when you understand the importance of well-being over academics, right? So I agree to that point. I kind of disagree with that they don't have to, you know, see something or go over or deal with something such of a tough discussion because it may cause a lot of different kind of points of views about it or uncomfortableness. Some kids, we live every day uncomfortable. It is what it is, right? Depending on what part of the country you come from, what community you come from. I feel that discussion of enslavement in the United States needs to be talked about in an authentic way. But at the same time, I feel that us, you know, getting rid of it or not talking about it, kind of, you know, kind of want that notion of just hiding it and hoping that it'll disappear, right? We have to have these toughest discussions, especially in this world and especially in this country in which, you know, it's getting diverse by the minute. If we don't learn about each other's cultures and histories, man, what a problem we're going to have in front of us moving forward. It's just about how do you go about doing that and the appropriate ways of doing that. So.
Okay. Chris, anything more you want to add there?
No, as I said, I was just curious, you know, what the opinions of your guests would be on that. As I said, I don't think that students really needed to go through that kind of experience at all. Slavery and America's history with it definitely needs to be discussed, and we need to be aware of each other's cultures. But yeah, making students uncomfortable is really not a necessary thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Chris. And listener named Mel.
You know, Evan,
go ahead, Justin.
That's what I like when I say that there's just some baseline rules. I would say one of the rules is don't make kids pick cotton. You know, when you're teaching about the Native American history and the Trail of Tears, don't make kids go out on the track and walk in their bare feet for 6 miles. Like we get it. Like I understand the impulse to make it relatable, to make you really feel it. But there are certain topics where it's too far gone. Like slavery is such an intensely emotional and horrific thing that there are ways to go about learning about that without actually putting your fingers in cotton. It's the cost benefit analysis is just, it's too far gone. You can't do it.
Melanie writes to the program and says, this lesson re-traumatized students and is inappropriate, and compared it to teaching about the Holocaust by grouping Jewish kids in fake concentration camps. She says, of course not. We would not do that. I don't think that's an unfair comparison here. And there would not be an excuse to do that to Jewish kids. There is not, I think, a good reason to try to role play slavery of any kind. I think kids can get just how intense and terrible and tragic slavery was without having to be made to role play it.
In this instance, we're concentrating rightly so on the effect on black kids in the classroom. But I would argue, even if this were an all white classroom and they said, you know, we're going to split you up into A's and B's and the A's need to pick cotton, that is still trivializing the experience. It's reaching for some kind of authenticity, but I think is, you know, by definition, not getting there. It's making it like a classroom activity. So the concentration camp analogy is a good one. You wouldn't have kids jumping from heights learning about 9/11. There's just some things that it's just not appropriate. It doesn't matter how hard you think about a situation for it.
Well, and one more point for Justin, I'll let him go. And I'd like to ask both our guests about this. You know, Justin, in some of the conversations you've had with me, with others, about your new book, you have talked about sort of the state of education right now and the national discourse, which at times is not very healthy and sometimes gets distorted about what's actually happening in most classrooms. I mean, I'm sure there's outlier examples everywhere, and we're kind of talking about one today. But one of the common complaints that we're hearing from, again, not everybody, but some white people in this country, is that the shift in education is designed to make kids feel bad about being white. And again, I'm sure there are, we've seen some pretty rare exceptions, but a lot of the lessons are just teaching real history. And the interesting thing to me is, if people are really exercised about, you know, hey, you can't make kids feel bad for being white. You can't make them, you know, feel any sort of feelings about what white people have done in this country, are they equally exercised when a lesson actually makes black kids feel bad for being black? I mean, to the point that Noelle Evans was raising earlier this hour, talking to a student who has heritage as in the black community and in the Puerto Rican community and wanting to sort of renounce his blackness. That is truly making kids feel bad about their racial identity. That's not theoretical. That's not jumping to conclusions. Like, that's actually happened. And I don't know if people are as exercised about that. Am I making sense there, Justin? I mean,
Yeah, you're absolutely right about it. And I think what it gets back to in both cases is the need for teachers to have intensive and appropriate education on this kind of thing, because it's perfectly easy to imagine a lesson on slavery that makes white kids feel bad in a way that they don't need to, if you assign the blame to them. personally. The good thing is that we have an extensive infrastructure set up for educating educators, for helping them teach students about every single topic under the sun, about keeping abreast of the latest research on it and whatnot, and you know, culturally sensitive things and racism and aspects of our history should be no different. We need to equip teachers to do the difficult work of education that we assign to them in our society. And then once we're assured that education is in place, which it isn't right now, but once it is, then we train them to do their jobs, just like we train them to do other aspects of their jobs. It doesn't need to be like a glaring separate issue, like this is the only place where we need to, you know, hyper monitor what's going on in the classroom. We need to provide teachers with the knowledge and the skills to get through these difficult questions, and then expect that they can do so.
Jeremy, how do you feel about, you know, this national discourse where we're worried about making kids feel bad about their racial identity? And a lot of that is sort of, there's some projection, I think, going on there. But this is a real life case of that. And I just don't know how many people are actually as angry about it.
I think we got to be aware that this ain't nothing new. The curriculum has never, ever reflected young black boys and young black girls, whether it's the texture. When you read more about a bear in shapes in earlier grades than you would see about, you know, anything that's related to a young black man or young black boy, right? So the reflection of what they see themselves in a curriculum that's been so long standing that I don't think just one particular area can highlight to say that, hey, you know, there's some kids out there that we may start to begin to make feel bad about who they are, whether they're white or black. That's already happening. So for those who feel that, welcome, because it's always been like that for some, you know. Mm-hmm. So to answer that particular part of the question, I would definitely have people to understand that this ain't nothing new. And there's been always, you know, an ignorance or, you know, not really a highlighting of the particular cultures that the school systems represent. It's usually always one particular culture that you just see more reflected in the culture and the curriculum that these kids actually engage in school over others. And it's sad to see that you would see, you know, there's no change for curriculum in populations of students that of color, and they're still, you know, not really seeing themselves in the text, let alone in the lessons. So I think we need to start there first to kind of be able to deal with that problem. And to piggyback off what Justin was saying, again, I do feel that there's a need for authentic education. I feel that there's sometimes when people push out that we need to kind of not talk about certain things or not, you know, discuss certain things or have certain things in our curriculum because they're sensitive. We know this is a sensitive subject. You know, dealing with race and dealing with culture is definitely a tough subject to talk about. We just got to figure out ways of how do we talk about these things and not hide them or go away from them because we feel that it may cause some defenses and what we like to call it on my research team, right? That criticality brings growth. So I think that we need to be able to still have these discussions and have these lessons. I just feel that in the way in which this particular professor or teacher chose to do it, we have to figure out how do we do that differently and not fall into that. And that does fall in training. Like Justin said, I think our teachers need to mix training in terms of how to engage, you know, the population that they serve, especially those populations of black and brown babies.
Well, I'm going to let...
And I would say, I would just add, there's no rule against kids having feelings in classrooms.
No.
You know, I would argue that if you're teaching slavery or the Holocaust or the atomic bomb and kids just coast through and go about their day, then you're not doing a very good job. But there's, you know, there's a difference between having feelings and, you know, the traumatization talking about. And then, right, you know, it's up to the teacher not only to kind of observe and manage those feelings, but make that a part of the learning. Like, you know, I can remember that quite specifically from my time in high school, as you learn about the atomic bomb and that, you know, that makes you feel a certain kind of way of like, you know, that was my team that killed all those people. And mm-hmm. you know, we just mm-hmm. learned about all those reasons about why maybe that was or wasn't called for, but you know, that's still feelings that I get that are fruitful and that a skillful educator should recognize.
Yeah, feelings are not trauma. I mean, some feelings can be traumatic, and I understand it's crossover, but just having feelings about a lesson, having an emotional reaction to a lesson, is not inherently traumatizing. And we cannot sanitize everything so that no student, white, black, or otherwise, doesn't feel anything. So, let's. I am way. Oh my goodness gracious! I got to let Justin Murphy go. I'm going to take an early break. We've got a little bit more feedback. We got more feedback from listeners that which we'll share with Jeremy. Justin Murphy, you are generous with your time. Thanks for making it for us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Justin's a reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle and the author of a new book on the history of segregation and racism in Rochester schools. Your Children Are Very Greatly in Danger is the name of the book. Let's come right back with Jeremy Smith from Freedom Scholars Learning Center and more feedback from listeners on the other side. Coming up in our second hour, the American Academy of Pediatrics wants parents to wait until 8 when it comes to kids and cell phones. And a lot of parents took that to mean 8 years old. Cell phones at 8. Now, the AAP says 8th grade. And a lot of parents and kids are starting way too young on screens and getting their own phones. For parents who are trying to hold out, well, what do they do about it? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Daryl writes to say, while white children should not be made to feel bad about their race, it is wholly appropriate to teach history in a way that helps children feel the sadness about past wrongs in our history. You cannot spare people the experience of feeling sadness and regret and still teach them history. That's from Daryl. I think that's exactly what the guests have been saying. Thank you, Daryl, for that. Let me get Rosa on the phone in Leicester. Hi, Rosa. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. I'm Rosa from Webster. Thank you. I love your show. I just wanted to comment on your comment about people are very hyper aware. Some people are very hyper aware about how teachers might provide incorrect perceptions of how kids should feel about things. And I think what they're failing to recognize, and that has been happening for a long time, for people of color, right? For kids of color. Just recently, I'm Mexican, and I was planning a Mexican trip to Mexico City to visit family there. And my child who goes to Webster schools came home telling me about how Mexico is a violent country, you know, and that she doesn't want to go to this trip. You know, she's Mexican and biracial. And I was flabbergasted. I'm like, has your teacher even been to Mexico? Like, yes, there are violent parts of it, right? But the whole country itself is not violent in all the places poor. And like the perception my daughter was giving of Mexico was incorrect. And I was just, you know, I know there was no ill intent, but that's happening. But it's certainly in my perception, it's been happening a lot more for people of color than incidents on children with a white background. Not to say that it's not possible that we could get there, and we should always educate our teachers on how to address things in an appropriate manner. Thanks.
Yeah, Rosa, thank you. I appreciate that. I wonder, Jeremy, if you want to add anything there.
She hit it right on the nail. And this is what I was saying earlier about the importance of, you know, when we talk about perception, like she's saying, I think if we would have spent more time in addressing, you know, other excellence of Black prior to teaching this particular, right, I don't think that, especially that young boy that was actually a mixed race of Black and Puerto Rican, that he just totally disregards his Black side or is afraid to kind of, you know, relate to his Black side. If he would have known that his Black side is the kings and queens that, you know, really, you know, civilize this earth, you know, in many ways. And that's, research says that. It's easily drawn, right? I think that would have helped him with his perception about, okay, this is a hiccup in our time in which, you know, as we were basically enslaved or prisoners, right? Not really slaves, we're really prisoners. I think that he would have kind of looked at it in a different lens. But when you always start off the story of, you know, just falling and being weak and a slave, right? Who wants to hear the story of, you know, that's my people, that they just laid down? They never tell the story of resistance or the story of the fight, you know? And I think if we did that more, you know, I think it'll be easier, especially for young Black men, to interpret this particular activity. Now, in the way that he did it, I'm not agreeing with that. I'm just saying that I think it will be easier for that young man to understand that, okay, that this is a hiccup, a small hiccup in our longstanding history on this earth.
All right, back to the phones. Gary in Bloomfield. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Evan. I realize you're late in the show here, so I'm going to try to be as succinct as I can. I get my point, though, is that I think you have to recognize. I have a large background in education, and I always try to connect with the soul, because you're not going to make a change in people's behaviors. You're not going to actually teach something that's going to last if you're just coming out of a textbook concept. But if you can get people to feel, if you can get the people to feel something, this is what really sticks with them. I'll give you an example. I taught them one of the classes I taught was on the beginning of American Revolution. And instead of going through the book, I told them, put the book away. We're not going to use it. And I looked at the roles, the social circumstances, and I assigned roles to the students, and I described very short vignettes what the Boston merchant, you know, what his needs are, what the shipper, what the farmer, what their needs were, what their problems were, and then I just told them to discuss it among themselves and try to accomplish their needs. And in about 10 minutes, they were crumpling up papers and pencils and throwing them at each other, and they had formed groups. And I stopped it after, let it go for a little while. It was very noisy. And they and when we discussed it, they really understood about what it was like. And in fact, one of the comments that the student made was, I said, what did you conclude our war is? And the kid said, war is very messy. You don't know who's right or wrong. You can't get that out of a textbook. These kids felt it. And then what? On top of that, I mean, we went through all the different scenarios, but at the end of that, I realized there was about 5 minutes left in class, and we kind of exhausted the subject. And what I did is, this was in the 80s, so I gave them, the one thing I know about seventh graders is you don't let them sit there with nothing to do. So I gave them, I flipped the thing, and I said, okay, now, you're campesinos in Central America. We were talking, so I introduced them to the concept of the Contras and the Contra War and stuff like that, and exploitation in Central America. And the bell rang, so they went on. The next day, the next time I met with these guys, they were talking about what they'd read in the paper about Central America. And it turned out to be that this was the so-called C group, the not-so-bright students, so supposedly. And they were just engaged in the current events.
Well, let me just jump in, because our bell's going to ring in a second here, Gary, but I appreciate the points. I mean, certainly experiential learning can be just getting beyond the textbooks important, but I'm going to let Jeremy Smith offer some final thoughts about doing that in a way that is thoughtful, not traumatizing, and effective. I mean, not every lesson's the same. What do you want to leave with listeners, Jeremy?
You took it out of my mouth, Evan. As long as it's in what I was saying earlier, about the importance of being culture reflective. Does it reflect the actual population you serve? Even if it is culturally relevant, is it culture reflective? And if it is, then okay, it will make sense to do activities such as what the young man did. But to me, and what I've heard, the little evidence that I have, it's nowhere near culture reflective. So in that case, there should have been some options, right? Some modifications, some different accommodations that go down to actually teach something in this particular manner. Like the caller just mentioned recently, I'm all for, teaching to the soul. I think I'm a firm believer of that. I believe he's right on with that. I think that that's important. But how do we go about doing that in a way in which it really speaks to kids' well-being and not just their academic success or their academic capabilities? I think that that's when we keep ourselves out of situations like this young man is in right now. And for all the teachers who are listening out there and all the educators who are listening out there, we understand that there is a way to actually teach authenticity, right? But the authenticity has to make sense to the population in which you serve. And if their well-being is not put first as a priority before academics, then we run into these dangerous problems.
Jeremy, where can people learn more about the Freedom Scholars Learning Center?
FreedomScholarsLC.org. That's our actual website right now. FreedomScholarsLC@gmail.com if you want to send an email. We also have a Facebook, Freedom Scholars LC. We're actually located right now at 1245 Culver Road and 1124 Culver Road. Two churches. We share two buildings. We have a summer program coming up right now. Registration is online, our Freedom School link on our webpage. And thank you, and it's a blessing.
Jeremy, great to have you, and I hope we can talk soon.
Yes, thank you, Evan. Awesome.
Jeremy Smith from the Freedom Scholars Learning Center. More connections coming up in a moment.